Sue Hall and Tristan McDonald here, August 16th, bringing you yet another episode in Talking the Dis Out of Dyslexia, hosted by the Whole Dyslexic Society. Alyssa is a young woman who is new to her discovery of dyslexia, and you'll hear her unique way of navigating her world. She allowed me to take her through a podcast version of a typical interview assessment and recognize the talents that come with the gift of dyslexia.
Okay, Alyssa, welcome. Thank you very much for giving up your time. Tristan has sort of introduced you to me a little bit, but maybe you could introduce yourself to everybody via our recording.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for having me. My name is Alyssa, and I guess I'm a little experienced with dyslexia. Like, I grew up learning using like colors to kind of navigate things. I'm very like imaginary based person, so I haven't been diagnosed or anything like that, but I was definitely struggling with just the regular education system, and I always preferred things that were imagery or whether I was doing things hands-on and things like that.
That sounds really exciting. I like the idea about the color thing. Can you tell me how that works?
Yeah, it came naturally to me as I was growing up, to kind of remember like the days of the week or the months in the year. I had a color for every day of the week. So, you know, Friday is yellow, Saturday is red for me, Sunday is green. So I have a color for everything. And if I needed to remember a word, sometimes I would just picture the word, but with a color, or I would just picture an image. So, when I hear dog, I think of dog. Usually I just think of like a brown dog, but yeah.
That is so cool. That sort of ties in a little bit with what I would normally explain to people, in as much as there are three components to dyslexia. And one of the components is that we do think in images, and obviously if we think in images, we need an image to think with. So if you say a word like dog, you're going to have an obvious image, right? You're going to see a three-dimensional dog and yours happens to be brown, right? Whereas when you say a word like the, would you have an image for the meaning of the word the?
Not really. Like for the, it's like a gray kind of blob. And then I could see the word after I picture that color.
Oh, that's interesting.
With if, yeah. And then with if, for some reason, I picture someone like standing on a cliff, kind of looking down and or walking down the street. I don't know why.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. But what I found very interesting, you said you saw the color first and then the word, like the spelling. Yeah. That's very cool. I haven't met anybody who can do that. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's different for sure.
That's very cool. So, Alyssa, if I had met you and you were coming for a typical interview assessment, I would ask you about the things that you really feel you're good at and the things that you feel you struggle with. Can you give us a few things that you might feel makes up part of your strengths?
Are you referring to like hobbies and things like that?
Anything.
Like things I'd be good at, and then
anything, academic, hobbies, whatever. Mm-hmm.
I'm good at like art and things like that. Like math, I was never good at. I'm good at like music and like feel, but I use my intuition and I feel out tones and like kind of what sounds better to me. But and I could like I can like get a good sense of like people's energy and stuff like that, and I can kind of feel out whether they're, you know, in a bad mood or good mood. So I'm really good with stuff like that. But when it comes to a lot of logical things like math and like, you know, like statistics and things like that, it's definitely my weakness.
Yeah, no, I understand that. That sounds fairly sort of typical, to be honest. Yeah. And would you say you're a sport person? Do you like?
Not really. I like doing physical things. Like for sports, I prefer dancing and stuff like that, or kickboxing. But and I can be pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Anything hands-on, like if I'm doing hands-on stuff, I can pick it up faster.
Exactly. That is very typical. I agree with that. And so how did you ever feel about reading?
Reading, I love to read, but I find that my head, my mind starts going to other places, and it's kind of hard to pay attention. Sometimes when I'm reading, but sometimes when I'm writing, especially, I'll write the words like with the numbers in different or the letters in different places, and I'll have to like rewrite it. Sometimes I get my words mixed around when I'm reading. So I would say like reading and writing takes a bit more effort for me, as much as I like to do it.
Yeah, no, I get that. It honestly, this is a very sort of typical summary of what our strengths would be and what our weaknesses would be. We're typically very hands-on people, that's for sure. And we learn by watching and doing rather than reading instructions and that type of thing.
Yeah, and I would definitely agree with that for me personally.
And my son, if we get IKEA furniture, he would be able to put it together without the instructions. I would be battling through the instructions. Oh dear. So, were you interested to know what this gift of dyslexia might be? Would that interest you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so what we look for, Alyssa, is we look for somebody who can imagine something three-dimensional. So, for example, if I said to you, close your eyes and imagine an animal, right? Would you be able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
What animal would you
say? I'm picturing a kitty cat.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm guessing it's three-dimensional. It's not like a photograph of one, right?
No, it's an actual cat, and I picture myself lying down, and he's purring on my chest. Yeah.
Okay, so for this exercise, we need to get rid of you in the picture. We just need the cat. Is that okay?
Okay.
Oh, dear. Now, what do you suppose is looking at the cat? As it's in your imagination, would you have an idea of what's doing the looking? You're in your imagination, you're looking at the cat. Right?
Mm-hmm.
What's actually looking at it? What part of you do you think is doing the looking? Have you ever thought of that?
No, I haven't. I guess my eyes are looking at the cat. Yeah.
Well, now this is why I asked, because obviously when we have our real eyes looking at a real cat, it's pretty obvious what's doing the looking. But when we close our eyes and we imagine a cat, there is still a part of us that's doing the looking, and we tend to call it the mind's eye. Quite frankly,
I don't. Okay,
I don't really care what you call it, but you need to know that there's a part of us that does the looking when we imagine. Is that okay with you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that part of you, right, we're going to have fun with. So I need you to ask the cat to stay still in your imagination. Is it facing you or is it sideways on?
Just standing and kind of looking at me and meowing.
Awesome. So ask it to stay still for a little while. Now see if that part of you that's doing the looking, see if you can move it around the cat. It's like you're looking at the cat and you're moving, but it really is only your mind's eye that's moving.
What I'm seeing is everything else is kind of like black, like a black canvas, and so
yes.
There's a cat, and I don't see myself, but I see myself like, or I don't, you know what I mean? Like I'm walking around the cat.
Perfect.
So now I'm seeing the side of the cat, and now
Perfect.
I'm seeing the back of the cat.
So keep going. See if you can walk all the way around it.
Oh yes, I'm definitely yeah. I'm seeing the cat again, and the cat's just kind of tilted her head over to look at me as I'm coming around, but. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well done. So when you've had fun with that, you can get rid of the cat. And
mm-hmm.
Basically, I'm going to tell you that not everybody can do that.
I never, like before I learned about dyslexia, I never would have thought that, because to me, I thought it was the norm. Like I thought it was normal.
Well, of course you would, because anybody would automatically assume that everybody thinks like they do, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, who have you got? Nobody's ever going to sit next to you and say, how do you think? Can you imagine a 3D cat and walk around it in your imagination?
Yeah, no one thinks to ask a question like that, for sure.
nobody says that, right? But the point is, not everybody can do that. And when we get rid of the cat, and we put, say, for example, if you drew a lowercase d in front of you, like D for Donald, a lowercase d, and then you started to do that with your mind's eye and you started to walk around it, by the time you get 180 degrees to it, it becomes a P.
Whoa.
I'm guessing that...
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it really is. This is like exercising my mind. This is so cool.
Yeah, well, it's a cool mind.
True.
So the thing is, Alyssa, that beautiful gift that we have in the 3D world that we're using to see around the cat, we use it for sport and we use it for inventing and we use it for building and we use it for strategy. We're basically the out-of-the-box thinkers that can see things from all different angles, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you start using it in the two-dimensional world of print, then we get into trouble. And don't forget, this was way back when you just started to learn the alphabet, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense.
That's awesome. Wonderful. So that's the first part to it, right? And then the second part is that... people think mostly either in sound or mostly either in images and feelings. So imagine a continuum, right? Imagine a line, and at one end of the line, you have all the sound thinkers, and at the other end of the line, you have the image and feeling-based thinkers.
Okay, yeah, like a spectrum almost.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the education system is built for the people down the sound thinking end. And they assume that we all think with the sound of words. Now, we happen to be down the other end, and we think most of the time with images and feelings.
Mm-hmm.
When we are young and we've got through the alphabet, we're asked to learn to read by sounding out. It's called phonetic instruction. So when we come to a word like cat, we're supposed to go k-a-t-er.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that's not too bad for the word cat, but it really doesn't work for a lot of the words that we then would come in contact with. It's quite difficult, right?
Mm-hmm. And I remember even being in like grade one and learning how to read, and I found it better when they had the picture book. So let's say the word cat was there and I had to learn how to, you know, sound that out and read that. If there was an image there, it was... Yeah. So much easier for me to figure it out.
Absolutely. And a lot of the children nowadays like graphic novels for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
But the thing is, sounding out is not our preferred way of learning to read because we're not the typical sound thinker.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. I know I'm not.
Okay, so and the more we learn to read phonetically, the more we're likely to spell phonetically, and that is definitely called atrocious spelling.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I hear what you're saying.
Okay, first component is this lovely way of thinking. The second one is the two different ways of thinking. And the third part of it is just back to the very beginning of our conversation where we have words that have three parts to them. They have a spelling, they have a pronunciation, and they have a meaning. And if you mentioned earlier that obviously you're going to have a picture for the meaning of cat or dog, but you're not going to have a picture for the meaning of the, if, and little words like that. In fact, 217 of those little words make up half of what we read, no matter what level, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if we're trying to create that film as we read, there are going to be blanks in it, and we'll get to the bottom of the page and think to ourselves, what was that about?
Yeah, I've been there.
That's when you drift off, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is that making a bit of sense to you? These three components, this beautiful way of thinking, where we alter perception, and then we have to learn to read phonetically, which is not our thing, and we're not given images for at least half of the words that we read. And that makes up the challenge.
Yeah, it really does. Because it is hard. It is hard to put an image on certain words, like if and stuff like that. And sometimes I'll just see like random scenarios, or like I mentioned, like someone walking down the street and thinking, or you know, what if I do this, or what if I do that? Like that's how I saw if.
Exactly. But the point is, we have to be able to define it without using the word if.
Yeah, that's true. And that would be very helpful, I think.
It's tricky, and it's something that they don't cover in school, right? And it's obviously not important for the sound thinkers, but it's most important for the picture thinkers, because we think in pictures, so no picture, no thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Lots to think about.
It is interesting to think, you know, because I've sit in the same boots as both of you, where I always thought that everybody thought the way I did, right? You would just automatically assume anyone would, right? Like, it's just thinking, it's just thoughts that appear in your head. How differently could you think it, right? But
it's definitely, it makes you question, like, we have different ways of thinking. There's a lot more to learn from each other in that sense. And a lot more to discuss. Like, is there ways to learn how to learn with, you know, just by sound and stuff like that, if you're dyslexic, or do you just stick to imagery, or do you try and, you know, kind of dabble in that area of learning with sound and see what you can do with that? Or, and same goes for people that are sound learners. Should they practice once in a while learning with imagery to just kind of expand their minds a bit?
But the thing is, Alyssa, I work with people who have this way of thinking, and we address all those three components. We show you how to control your perception. We clear the alphabet confusions. We show you how to read by spell reading, which is what adults do. So if you came to a word like gift and you didn't know what it was, you would say, what's G-I-F-T? And I would tell you, because you've spelt the correct letters to me, and I can then tell you what the word is, right? Yeah, and then we use plasticine clay for everything. We look up the meaning of the, we make a three-dimensional model of what the means, and then you're happy because your brain has the spelling, it has the sound, and it has the meaning. So we can address all of those three issues in the programs that we have. But ideally, obviously, if children were taught in this way from the very beginning, whether they were sound thinkers or picture thinkers, then the challenges would never arise. I mean, that's, to me, that's the most simple solution.
Yeah, and I think that's a really great idea. If we were introduced those ways of learning to begin with, you know, people wouldn't, I don't feel like people would struggle as much, or, you know, they wouldn't feel as inadequate, because, you know, personally for me, I felt in a lot of ways in high school, I felt inadequate and maybe even insecure because I wasn't picking things up quite as fast as others.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very strong point, because it's also, if we introduced this way of teaching, and then not only would the teachers see that there's different ways of thinking, but the students who are among other students can see, oh, look, other students think differently. Maybe I have to explain things or help them out differently, whatever, rather than just be bullied or judged or want to hide.
They wouldn't get the labels, right? Mm-hmm. Because as soon as they see that something's apparently wrong, then they test the children and label them. And then the label begins with dis. And you know, that's a sort of slippery slope, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it puts people in an uncomfortable position, because they won't want to talk about it. They'll think it's a negative, right? Because the society around them or the community around them just, what's the word I'm looking for? There's that
stigma.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, because then people grow up, you know, not feeling good enough, and then they don't pursue what they want to do with their lives because, you know, you're feeling inadequate. You're feeling like you can't learn things. Mm-hmm. When really you just needed a different style of learning, and you're just as good as everyone else. Like, you are, you know, we are, you know, as people, we're worth it. Like, it's just when learning, like being taught a certain way, and then you can't pick up on that, it's really hard to feel good about yourself at times, which is really unfortunate. And I'm hoping that we, like, people can change that and be more aware about dyslexia and the different learning styles out there, because, you know, a lot of people have different needs when it comes to learning as well.
I think you've just hit the nail on the head. Yeah, I think you got it 100%. But it's sad that, unfortunately, so many people don't know this, and that's why we're doing the podcast, to make sure that hopefully as many people as possible get to understand that there is this beautiful way of thinking. It is something that we could prevent, and the methods are already in place. It's just that we need to use them.
Yeah, no, it's amazing, and I really appreciate that you guys are bringing more awareness to I want to say dyslexic community, but just in general, just to people, because I forgot where I was going with this.
Well, no, I appreciate your time, because you're part of this. That's
Yeah, and I want to say thank you, too, because it's definitely helped me, because Tristan mentioned it a few times before, and it just really helped me, like, realize, like, yeah, like, you know, there is other ways that I could be learning things that would better suit my needs, and then mm-hmm. I could pick up on things.
Absolutely. And a typical interview assessment, you know, such as this was, it's very, very common, if you like. The stories that people bring are very similar, right? They've struggled when they know they're making a lot of effort. They've put the time in and they're not getting the success that is equal to the effort that they've used. And they do begin to feel badly about themselves. So it's a very typical story. And I think the more people hear it, the more they'll realize, well, gosh, that might be me.
Yeah, and then, you know, they're not feeling quite as alone or quite as, you know, oh, I'm not good enough, right? It's just realizing that, hey, there's different ways to be able to learn and do things. And it's, you know, one way is to understand dyslexia, but also understand yourself and how you learn. Yeah. And then you know where you are on the line, on the spectrum, and then you can, like, learn accordingly to that.
Absolutely.
You said it perfectly. It also, you know, you also get to understand what you're, I guess, what you're good at a bit more, right? Because you think with this way, not you specifically, but because people with dyslexia think with this way, with of this very imaged or model-like way of thinking, they can go, okay, I can work in carpentry because I can literally imagine the building in front of me being built. Or this way, I truly believe, can benefit anyone, no matter if you're dyslexic or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was even going to mention that before too, just expanding your horizons a bit too, and just having that bit of variety for just like just the general too, right? Now, if you're actually dyslexic, of course you want to pick up on this and learn this and be aware of this, because it'll really help you push forward in life. But I like the variety aspect as well. And then just knowing that when you're facing like some crazy mathematical equations or just something that's more like audio learning or through a book, right? You can understand, well, this is how I learn best. So how can I apply this to what I'm doing now?
Well, the interesting thing with math is basically it's all concept, right? But nobody gives us an image for the meaning of the words that we use in math, right? Nobody gives us an image for the meaning of integer, or nobody gave me an image for the meaning of multiply. So it's all conceptual, right? And that's what makes math so difficult. But if you make a model for the meaning of integer and whatever other terms you have struggling with, you've just got it. It's just part of you, and you just know what to do. It's really, really simple. But when teachers do use the method that reaches both the little sound thinker and the little picture thinker, what is happening, they're noticing that the sound thinkers, who are sort of pretty driven usually and, you know, very sort of linear and very sequential, they're actually having to be more creative, which I don't think is a bad thing, do you?
Not at all. I think, you know, creativity is super important, especially, like, personally to me it is too, because when we can think creative, we can bring out more ideas, and, like, when people have more ideas to bring to the table, we can create something better, like, through life or in the career, in the job force, or, you know, maybe you're making a project for
something.
That's going to get you the success and the beautiful creation, right?
Absolutely. And when you're an athlete, And you use this way of thinking. Mountain bikers send their perception ahead of them, so they get the information a little bit quicker than they would do otherwise. Downhill skiers visualize the whole track as they're being talked through it at the top of the slope. Hockey players, Wayne Gretzky sees the whole game from above as he's playing his part in it. It's huge. Curlers, right, can see everything that's going to happen when that rock gets down the other end of the rink. So it's whether you're an artist or whether you're an athlete or whether you're a strategist or a tradesperson, it's a huge, huge gift. I wish more people realized that that's what they're using when they are very good at something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And I kind of wish that they would start to introduce this way of learning in the education system.
We'll have to put it together, Lisa. We will. Oh, dear. Well, I'm very, very mindful of your time, and I'm very, very grateful for you being able to come online like this.
Awesome. Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I love being a part of this and giving out my word and listening to what you guys have to say. It definitely is really awesome stuff, and it'll really personally help me in the future as well.
Oh, I hope so. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Interesting, right? So many people have this gift in varying degrees, which in turn brings varying degrees of the challenge too. Dis only means difficulty, not unable. If you want to know where your nearest facilitator is, just go to the main website, www.dyslexia.com, and see if you can find the book, The Gift of Dyslexia by Ronald D. Davis. It's an easy and a great read. For Sue and Tristan, just email them at info@thewds.org.